Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of April 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Hear the weather forecast from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That comes up as we close out our half hour together. And along the way, we'll discuss more about the weather and how it's really hard to predict in the Midwest because of that great big wall we call the mountain range, the Rockies, out in the western United States. Mike Tenora will tell us all about that during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Checking now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon. Nearby May wheat at $6.76.5 was 3.5 cents higher at the end of the day. July futures at $6.82.75, up 3.25 at the end of the trade. May futures in the corn pit at $5.03.5, up 7.25. July at $5.09.5 in the corn pit, up 7.5. And September futures at $5.07.25. 8.25 higher. December futures, the new crop at $5.04.5 a bushel, up 8.75 cents. March corn at 9 higher, $5.12.5, and the May at 5.18 3/4, up 9. May soybeans for the day, $14.68.5, down 11.25. July at $14.64 3/4, down 6 cents. August futures up 3.25 at $14.5, and September at $12.85.5, up 7.25. November or the new crop at $12.27.5, 12 cents higher. January beans at $12.33, up 12 as well. Bean meal at $4.78.10, down $1.70. Bean oil at $42.50, 24 cents lower. Live cattle futures in the April at $143.92.5, up 22.5. June at $135.10, 12.5 cents higher. May feeders at $178.62.5, up 27.5. The August up 17.5 at $182.45 for the feeders. And lean hogs finished the June contract at $126.25, up the $3 limit. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures in the June at $101.54 a barrel, 21 cents lower. The RBOB gasoline, that's the wholesale price, just about unchanged, just $3.09 4/10. And ethanol futures at $2.26, a penny and 3/10 cents higher. The spread between the two is 83 4/10 cents wide. That's a penny and 3/10 narrower than it was yesterday. And natural gas at $4.73 2/10 cents. is down 7/10 cents. Diesel fuel trading at $2.98, 2 2/10 cents lower, and gold futures for the day up $3.50 at $1,284.20 a troy ounce. That's $3.50 higher. Checking out what the weather forecast is calling for in the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Partly sunny skies, a high near 60 degrees on an east wind at about 6 miles an hour. And then for this evening, we should see mostly cloudy skies and a low of 43 degrees, east-southeast winds at 7 to 10 miles an hour. Showers are likely tomorrow, possibly a thunderstorm. They'll come in our area after 1 p.m. We'll hear more about that a bit later from Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Partly sunny skies otherwise, a high of 69 tomorrow to start the day. And as we make our way through it, breezy south-southeast winds at 13 to 20 miles an hour, gusting to 29. Chance of rainfall set at 70% tomorrow night. Showers are likely, possibly a thunderstorm. That'll come before 1 a.m., cloudy during the early evening, then gradual clearing, a low of 46 tomorrow. South winds at 9 to 16 miles an hour. Rainfall precipitation set at 60%. Friday, sunny skies and 72, partly cloudy Friday evening and 45, and Saturday night, Saturday day during mostly sunny skies and 64, and then Saturday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, and a low of 43 degrees. Sunday, showers, mostly cloudy, and 62. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is the 23rd day of April, 2014. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us today to take a look at what happened in the marketplace is Jackie Vank. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County, though she's traveling this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, I do believe you're traveling or have been. Where have you been and what have you seen in the way of tractors that have been moving?
I knew you were going to ask me that. In fact, we were out to Des Moines, and on the way out, we really saw very little activity. A few fields planted along I-80. Coming back now, we're about halfway back. We're at Coralville, and I've been trying like crazy to take pictures of the planters, but these doggone hills out here and the semis in between, I haven't been able to get it done. But there's a lot of activity. It's pretty amazing how many fields have been planted since we drove out on Sunday afternoon.
Well, we won't say too much about you being here at the home of the University of Iowa, Iowa City, Coralville area, but that's where you are, just so everybody has an idea. That's 80 miles due to the west of Moline and the Quad City areas in Chicago, right there on Interstate 80. What'd you find out while you were in Iowa from farmers and others that you visited with?
Well, you know, everybody's frustrated. They all want to get moving, but, you know, it doesn't seem like anybody's terribly concerned about the lateness of planting like we see people who are not necessarily farmers. So very interesting. I did attend a meeting out here, and I thought that there was some really good stuff. You know, if you remember back, Todd, to when we had the Commodity Week and John Bondurant and a number of other people were on with us.
Sure.
You know, we were talking about that feed residual number, and that number came up again yesterday. So I did some more digging, and then I called Jerry Norton from the World Board. And when he called back, I found out some kind of interesting things about it. You know, we on our side of the industry tend to look at feed residual and mostly focus on the feed side of things. And one thing that he really cleared up for me was he said, if you look back over history, and I did, when you have a very large crop like we had last year, you have a high residual number or a high feed residual number. And when you have a smaller crop, like in 2012, you have a much smaller feed residual number. And all of a sudden it starts to click as to how it works. You know, when we first bring the crop in, there's a lot of corn you really can't account for. You know, you don't know how many new bins have been built. You don't know how many people are storing it on the ground. And bigger yet is you don't know how much out-of-condition corn might be out there from prior years. So what the feed residual number, I've always described it as a miscellaneous category, you know, like in accounting. And it actually is. It equals what the food use number is, what the export number is, minus whatever your crop production is. And that's your residual. In other words, it is your balancing act all the time. Now, one of the things you can have happen is by the time you get to the fourth quarter, of course, it's always much, much, much lower. And that's basically because that September quarterly grain stocks really gives us a good picture as to what's going on. But your out-of-condition corn actually can carry from one year to the next and still sit there on feed residual until it's used up or it's destroyed. And that's why we have such wide variations at times, you know, and especially in years where we've had odd ones. Like this year, you know, we're heading into a year where we do have out-of-condition corn, something that a lot of guys were talking about out here. You know, harvested kind of wet, put away kind of wet, expecting to be able to take it in during the winter, haven't been able to do it, you know, that type of thing. And so I think that it's just a better picture of what that feed residual category really is. And then it's like anything else when you come to the reports, until you really get a good handle, which we don't have until the end of the crop year, you don't really know what's out there. But you can, if you look at the report, at a breakdown on the report, you can actually see it gradually getting smaller as you get toward the fourth quarter and we have more information.
Let's stick with stats and statistics for a moment. Change from Washington, D.C., though, rather, to Chicago and the CME Group, because they announced this week that beginning May 1st, actually April 30th, because that's when the trading session for May 1 starts, they will be changing the limit moves, and their plan is to do that semi-annually, so they'll change May 1 and November 1 going forward.
That's exactly the truth, and I know there are some people who are very much up in arms about it. I was very much in favor of it, and I'll tell you why. If you look at $5 corn, 35 cents is about a 7% of the value of a bushel. You look at $14 beans, 70 cents was only 5%. A dollar is very close to 7% of the value. Same thing when you look at Chicago wheat and KC wheat. Chicago is going down to 35 cents. KC is going to 45 cents from 60. The only one that went up was beans, which went from 70 to a dollar. And you know, when you look at that, that's kind of a reversal of fortune for beans in some respects, because your fund people are always looking at allocation dollars. And when you have a larger limit number, your allocation dollars, of course, get used up faster. And so you can take more positions. And I think some of what we saw yesterday after the announcement came out was just funds rebalancing, because they have been actively buying in the corn. Wheat's been following the corn along because, you know, we got the wheat tour next week, and beans went down. So, you know, until they feel stable about where they're at or get to the right allocation levels, we'll probably see more of that kind of activity.
Is there some reason they target 7%, or is it just a number picked?
I think it's just a number picked. It used to be about 5%, prior to the volatility that we had years ago, you know, and so I think they've just picked the number and took the 5% and said, well, that's probably too low for this. And there's no real true formula for how they determine it. A lot of it is based on volatility, whether you're coming into a report, all of those things, because nobody can give you a good formula for margins, and margins are what drive limits, okay? And so, you know, I think 7%, they probably looked at a lot of historical information and said 7% is pretty good.
You mentioned the reversal of fortune in soybeans, so we did have the nearbys. Old crop, May and July, both lower today, but new crop, November on out, were higher.
Yeah, they definitely were, and, you know, I think when you look at that, I'm not too surprised by that in some respects. I think some of that is because you have people who are feeling that we could be 30% planted on corn by Monday, you know, which would indicate that we wouldn't really probably need to add a lot more bean acres. And so, therefore, you know, that supports beans. It's kind of surprising, on old crop especially. Old crop was taking it not only because of the funds, but because of China cancellations and potential for importing beans. And we actually have Argentinian meal coming into the U.S. now. So none of that really impacts old crop. So, you know, if you still want to do, you know, spreads and those types of things, you may buy old crop beans and spread it against wheat, do those that type of thing. So I don't think our producers should get all excited thinking that we're going to go wild on new crop versus anything else. You know, it's an opportunity is what it is.
You look ahead. What are your expectations for the export market for the coming week yet?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think, you have to look at the big key to the export market for the coming week is going to be what are the cancellations, and that's China and unknown, of course. You know, and last week we saw cancellations by both of them. The interesting part is so many times you only hear them talk about China, but we know very well that China and unknown are tied together. So, when we come out tomorrow, we're definitely going to be looking how much did they cancel and what happened.
Corn futures were higher today. That surprise you much, given the number of planters you hear that are rolling east of the Mississippi River?
Well, I think that I could say it surprised me, but it doesn't surprise me much when I see the funds reallocating. Let's wait for a few days and see when things settle down, and then really, you know, find out what's going on, because I don't think that we necessarily need to be going higher at this stage of the game. The Ukrainian thing seems to be settling down. I did find out some interesting things, Todd, about PEDV while I was out there. It's kind of interesting from the standpoint that it maybe explains why that quarterly hog and pig report showed more hogs than we expected. I found out that there's just a tremendous amount of misinterpretation going on those maps that we see that show numbers on the map. I think Iowa was 1726.
Mm-hmm.
1726 is not 1,726 cases of PEDV. Some farms test as much as four times, and what they mean by that is your first time you have it, it's a positive test, and that is a real outbreak. But once you're over it, then you go back in and you disinfect everything, and they found out through the process of elimination that they actually had to go in and burn out the insides of the crates and everything to be able to get rid of this. So if you didn't do that the first time, then you test it to make sure you don't have anything. That comes back positive. That's not a new case.
Hmm.
And then
stuff.
That can happen again. So very misleading, I guess, in some respects, or just not knowing how to interpret it.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great one.
You too. Jackie Vakes. Now here's...
In agricultural news, the Environmental Protection Agency is slashing its 2013 cellulosic biofuel mandate from 6 million gallons to less than 1 million gallons. EPA said the action follows the American Petroleum Institute and American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers petitions requesting reconsideration of the standard. EPA's revised projection and final standard in the rule are based on actual cellulosic biofuel production in 2013. Meanwhile, the U.S. ethanol industry has launched a new national television and digital advertising campaign designed to counter oil industry claims during the ongoing renewable fuel standard fight. The Fuels America Coalition announced the purchase of a 30-second television advertisement to air on cable for the next 2 weeks, along with a website. Claims made by the oil industry refuted by the Fuel America Coalition include that ethanol is driving up the price of gasoline at the pump, that it is harmful to vehicles, and that demand for corn for ethanol has led to more row crops planted on grasslands. The American Farm Bureau Federation is asking its members to resist a proposed rule from EPA that it says will impose unworkable regulations on the nation's farms. Published Monday in the Federal Register, the more than 111,000-word Waters of the U.S. rule could ultimately lead to expansion of federal regulation to cover routine farming and ranching practices, as well as other common private land uses, such as building homes. Among other things, the rule would expand federal control over land features such as ditches and areas of agricultural land that are only wet during storms. If carried out, Farm Bureau says ordinary field work, fence construction, or even planting could require a federal permit. EPA contends that exemptions will protect many farmers from the new rule, but the AFBF says that those exemptions will only apply to farming that has been ongoing since the 1970s, not new or expanded farms. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You can find all of our program at willag.org. That's willag.org. Or if you happen to be a Twitter user, just look for this handle, @CommodityWeek. That's my handle, and I post a whole bunch of things, including much of what you hear on our radio station right there on Twitter, @CommodityWeek. Now, coming up next, there are a handful of meteorologists on this planet that follow weather in all the places farmers grow commodity crops like corn, soybeans, wheat, and rice. Each is likely to tell you, as you'll hear, the most difficult forecast to produce is for right here where we live in the Midwest.
The hardest place to forecast the weather is in the middle of the United States.
That's meteorologist and agricultural economist Mike Tenora. He owns T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, and is a University of Illinois alum. We'll get to why that's important to the story in a moment. For now, let's focus on why he says it is so very hard to predict the weather in the middle of the United States, where the majority of the world's corn is grown. It is different than any other primary commodity crop growing region on the planet for some very simple reasons, says Mike Tenora.
Number one, in the central U.S., we have mountains off to the west. So if you think about it, as you're driving toward Denver, many people have done that, and as you get closer to Denver, you can see the Rocky Mountains in the distance. But until you get there, it's completely flat. So if you were to look at a map of the United States, the Rocky Mountains are essentially a big wall.
Well, this wall funnels cold air from the Arctic into the Midwest. It does the same for the tropical air from the Gulf of Mexico. and neither air mass can surmount the Rockies to expand and dissipate westward.
And so now you've set up this wall, and you have Arctic air coming south, you have tropical air coming north, and those two tend to interact right in the middle of the United States. The other unique thing about the middle of the United States is that it's flat. You could walk straight north to the Arctic or straight south to Latin America, and you would barely run into too many hills. It's generally just a flat topography. So we don't have a lot of interference with these different air masses when they do come to the north and to the south. So just because of that reason alone, that just sets up an incredibly unique setup that we really don't see in too many other areas of the world. I would argue the only other area that you really might see something like that would be in parts of Japan or possibly even parts of Argentina, but the Argentina climate doesn't fluctuate nearly as much as ours. So you just set yourself up for a very difficult weather forecasting experience in the central United States. Not surprisingly, though, you have a lot of meteorologists like myself that find that fascinating.
It is the north-to-south alignment of the Rocky Mountains that sets the stage for volatile weather in the Midwest. Here's how that differs, for instance, from Europe.
Europe is generally flat, except that it has the mountains right through the middle of their continent. But the difference between the Swiss Alps and, say, the Rockies is that the Rockies extend from north to south. The Alps extend from east to west. So that blocks, remember the mountains are basically a wall. So you have a wall lined up from east to west across Europe. So when tropical air flows northward from Africa, it gets blocked. Similarly, when it comes to the south from the Arctic, it gets blocked. So it's difficult to make those two air masses interact simply because of their topography.
These geographic differences, argues Mike Tenora, make weather in the middle of the United States far more difficult and interesting to predict. It also makes predicting corn yields much more difficult. Though Tenora, through his agricultural economics training at the University of Illinois and his meteorological training, has developed a yield forecasting tool that has proven to be rather accurate. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. Hey, have you checked out our website lately? I hope so. If not, and you're in the tractor, maybe planting, and you're thinking, hey, I'd like to catch up, but I'm kind of busy, and I missed part of what Jackie Vakes had to say. You can always do that at willag.org. That's willag.org. It's really simple and easy to do. If you want, you can try this website instead. No www in front of it. Make sure you put the http://. There. It's M. That stands for mobile. m.willag.org. It might be more useful to you. Either way, they're really good sites. Both contain the same materials, all the content that we produce for you on the radio station at WILL and Illinois Public Media for agricultural programming. Drop by one of those websites and visit willag.org to find all the information that services your needs.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
It's St. George's Day, patron of farmers. George was born to a Christian family during the late 3rd century. Eventually, he was martyred after refusing to participate in the persecution of Christians across the Roman Empire. George was sainted in 496. On this day in agricultural history in 1856, Granville T. Woods was born. Among Woods' inventions was an electric incubator for hatching chickens. In 1981, artificial skin was first transplanted in the U.S. on patients at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. The combination of cowhide, shark cartilage, and plastic was developed by a research team at MIT. This material makes possible the treatment of burn patients whose injuries might otherwise be fatal. In 1985, Coca-Cola announced it was changing its 99-year-old secret formula. New Coke, though, was a big flop. In 1992, the first McDonald's in Beijing, China opened. It is the world's largest McDonald's with 28,000 square feet, seating for 701,000 employees. And in 1993, Cesar Chavez died. He was the founder of the United Farm Workers Union. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated joins us from Kansas City. Drew, tell me about the weather forecast for the Midwest. I see there may be a bit of rainfall coming soon.
Yes, it looks like probably tomorrow we'll get up in the morning. We'll be okay if you're on the east side of the Mississippi River, shortly after that, it will start raining. We'll have quite a bit of rain here tonight developing across portions of Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, and Iowa, and we'll come across the river as we go through the day tomorrow. We should see generalized precipitation. I think everybody will be impacted at one time or another. The totals will vary quite a bit, though. We'll see some 3/4 inch plus amounts in a few locations, maybe northwestern Illinois and parts of southern Wisconsin could get a fair amount of rain, maybe over an inch. And the rest of us will probably see amounts more like maybe 1/4 to 3/4 of an inch, a lot of totals around 1/2 inch. So not a bad little event, but if we're trying to get in the field and get work done, it's not welcome, and that is the case. Unfortunately, it's the first of two storm systems. The second one's much larger and will have a bigger impact on the region. It will begin bearing down on the region. It looks like sometime late Sunday it'll come across the river, and we'll expect Illinois to be quite wet Sunday evening going into Monday morning, and we'll see that fester as we go through Monday and Tuesday with all of the eastern Midwest experiencing a considerable amount of rainfall. So we'll have a little bit of a break between these two events. Our best drying time will likely occur from Friday afternoon into Saturday, and then after that all bets are off, like I said. So it's going to be a little bit of a rough go here for a little while.
Are these what you would consider a cold or a temperate rainfall event?
Actually, I think it's a little bit of both. Just to be a meteorologist here, never give a straight answer, but we do expect the temperatures to warm as the storm, the bigger storm, the one from this weekend, comes rolling into the region. But as the storm gets on top of us, there will be a cold pool of air that will eventually chill the region down a bit. We'll see some high temperatures Monday and Tuesday, probably in the 50s and lower 60s, and it's not terribly cold, but it's cool enough that we'll see those soil temperatures maybe creep back down just a little bit.
Hey, thanks so much.
All right, have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. We post all of our agricultural programming in its entirety there each and every business day of the year. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.